Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Any new Apple products this week?
Oh, there was. Oh, man. I was joking. No, that keeps happening. It keeps happening. There was a new OS release where they added that search engine that is made out of trees.
Yeah.
Ooh, tree search.
It's my favorite kind.
It's just an update. Yeah, but that's the Pro Raw one too.
They did the there's what else? Well, I guess the Microsoft announcement is a Microsoft announcement, but it was all about like how they put Office on the official version of Office on Apple Silicon, and then Fitness Plus launched on Monday. So there's a lot going on even
also,
now.
Also, a fun set of exchange of ideas with Facebook, I guess you could say. Advertising tracking, which I've been enjoying this week, which involves Facebook taking out full-page newspaper ads.
I had a PR contact at Apple in passing. I said, well, it's quiet, isn't it? And the response was something like, oh yeah, December at Apple is super chill. They just keep on going. It keeps on happening. But yeah, the Facebook thing is interesting. That's Facebook taking out full page ads and newspapers like it was 1995 in order to say we're in the most transparent ploy to say we're standing up for small businesses because Apple threatens the ability for them to buy ads from Facebook.
If you turn the page though, a lot of people missed the second ad, which said it's opposite day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you gotta read the whole thing. That's a pretty great, I think Gruber nailed this, and we actually talked about it on Clockwise this week too, and came to the same conclusion that he had, which was that, you're putting a full page ad in the Wall Street Journal. You're targeting a very specific subset of people.
Very specific audience.
Specifically old white guy politicians.
Yeah.
That said, Tim Cook and Greg Joswiak and others on Apple have been kind of on the offensive, tweeting out retweets from Congress people and stuff who are kind of firing back at Facebook. So I don't think that this is necessarily going to help Facebook.
Who's got the upper hand in terms of people liking them, Facebook or Apple? Yep. I think it's Apple very clearly.
I think so too.
Facebook is,
and
not.
I think they have the moral high ground too.
I do.
So,
I agree. It's
and
a weird
we learned
story.
Anything from Revenge of the Sith. It's over when you have the high ground.
It's interesting when you have the thing that was announced like months ago, and it's not yet implemented, but it for reasons.
And they've pushed it back a few times too. So clearly, this is something I'm fascinated by it because Facebook and others seem to think this is just going to destroy them, and it may very well. I mean, I'm sure it'll put a dent in a lot of what they do.
Yes.
It was a good timing this week too that those app privacy labels came out at the same time, and the one for Facebook is like as long
a
as your leg,
long.
And it's I think this is it's not altruistic of Apple, right? Like it is a marketing move. It happens to align with stuff that I think a lot of people would agree is just the right thing to do. But, it's great for Apple because Apple gets to take a shot at these things that don't affect it at all, right? Like, because it made the decision to emphasize user privacy, and never create products that were as heavily leveraged into the tracking people so you can sell them things side of the business, it can go out and, take shots at these, companies without really having too much of a downside, I think.
Yeah. I talking about the Facebook's argument that this is going to ruin small businesses and all of that. My skepticism, I went into this, I was on Twit last weekend. I went into this a little bit there. Having worked in a media company, in editorial for a lot of years, at high levels, I spent a lot of time dealing with salespeople, dealing with the head of sales and the in media companies, usually the president of the company is comes from the sales side. So, which I would argue is a mistake, and or at least the bad ones are people who never view that their job is no longer being a head of sales but running a company, and that includes editorial. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I spent a lot of time with those people, and I can tell you they're not like us. They're not. They're just, it's a very different worldview. But also that I've seen firsthand how more data, especially you know in digital ads, how more data is always used as a sales tool. More data for the client, more data, pay for the ads and we'll give you more data, or we need to provide more data. We see it now happening in the podcast world where they want more data.
Yep.
And the truth is, and I'm going to say this. This is a generalization. I'm going to back off of it when I'm done. But the truth is, most requests for more data are a part of a sales pitch. There's something that makes you excited about buying a product of some kind, an ad product. Like, oh, we got to get in on this Facebook thing because they let us target X, or they let us reach these people, or you know, whatever it is. Or we're going to get all this data back about like who in what regions is clicking on our. And the lesson that I've learned is, it's used as a sales technique, but rarely the data is rarely actually used. A lot of the data that we talk about being mined and sent around and all of that, I think people would be surprised about how little of it actually ever is used for anything or seen by anyone. I think it's oversold. I think people, most organizations, Facebook is not one of them, but most organizations do not have the infrastructure to deal with processing, nor the staff to process large amounts of data. It doesn't happen, but it makes everybody feel good. That's what's going on in podcasting, right? Where it's like, you know, oh, I got to have my data. Like, what are you going to do with it? Well, you know, I don't know. Like that I think that is a truth of a lot of this consumer data. Now, that all said, Facebook's game that it has done really well at is allowing advertisers to target very specific markets and in a more efficient way. So if you are a small business and you want to reach people who only want to buy your Star Trek figurine, you can probably figure that out. And that's powerful. But that all said, Facebook has done and could do again a lot of other things that would be maybe less efficient and maybe harder, but less invasive, to still have a pretty good ad product that small businesses could use. Yeah. So I am deeply skeptical of it, and I think they overstate it, because that's the whole digital ad game is about overstating the use of data.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I think something important to consider here as well is that we took Apple to task, you know, before about, you know, enforcing its App Store rules. And being like, well, that's just what the rules say. Like, we don't make the rules. Yeah. It's like, you do make the rules. It's the same thing with Facebook, right? It's a situation where Facebook is saying, like, this is going to ruin these small businesses. And the answer is, that's not really something that, you know, that's in their boat. That's your thing, right? Like,
well,
you're the one.
If you created a market where a small business that survives by targeting people and marketing to them is like, first off, that small business probably killed a bunch of other businesses. Facebook enabled this kind of business to exist. It killed a whole bunch of other businesses. Now this business exists and Facebook says, no, this is the business we have to protect because they use Facebook and they rely on us and we need them.
Right.
And the other thing, and this is in a difficult economy and world events sort of world, this may come out as harsh. I don't mean it to be harsh, but no business fundamentally has the right to exist above other priorities. Like,
yeah,
you have to balance the priorities. And a lot of times I see this where it's like, well, but you can't do this because then this business would like, well, I mean, I'll just say it. Well, we can't close indoor dining because restaurants need to survive. And it's like, yes, I want restaurants and the people who work there to have jobs and be in business. But that doesn't mean everybody's got to get sick and a lot of people have got to die because restaurants have to stay in business. There are priorities.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And I think, you know, that might be, obviously that's a much more dire situation.
Right. But and yet it sort of comes from the same place, I feel, which is, we got to save these businesses.
Money has to keep flowing, right? Like if the economy dies, you know, we're all in deep trouble.
And it's so specific because it's these businesses. And again, I would say to you, yes, these are real businesses and it's real money and it's flowing to real people and there's harm that potentially is created. But I would also argue some of these businesses are created by putting other kinds of businesses out of business, and that if these businesses have to adapt or change or, guess what, be replaced by a different kind of business that doesn't require that level of invasiveness, the money, I think, is still going to flow. It's going to be different.
Well,
and it's Facebook saying, no, no, no. It's like somebody moving to an area and saying, no more people should move here now that I'm here. It's like Facebook's right, well, now that I've built this system, please don't make me change it.
Yeah, right, exactly. This system exists. You can't uninvent it. Well, you can a little bit. Uh-huh. I mean, so there's a couple things here. One, I mean, this is, like you said, the trend has always been to more data, right? Like ever since advertising has been on mass media, people have been trying to figure out who their ads are reaching, whether it's print ads, radio ads, TV ads, et cetera, right? We've had all those surveys and things you used to get, and obviously digital
advertising.
Because
they're unmeasurable, right?
Exactly. You can't automatically know who saw this ad, right? And like even with that, it's all statistics at that point, right? Because you're filling out a survey about ads or something like that, so you're extrapolating from that and saying like, well, we're reaching this demographic watching this show or whatever, right?
Did they see that ad? Did they go to the can during that ad? We don't know.
Yeah, right, exactly. People mute the show during the ad or whatever. Do they go out and buy something? How do you can't really even track that either, right? But like online, a lot of that stuff is kind of up for grabs because so much of the information is inherently transactional in a way that is logged and is measurable. And so I think you and I both, I'm sure, have gotten many of those questions on whether we've been on interviews with, you know, other media stuff or from family and friends about like, oh, I was talking about product X and then I was scrolling through my Instagram timeline and saw an ad for product X. Like they must be listening to me. And, you know, the answer is, no, they're not listening to you. However, you would be shocked at how much they know about you.
I was going
to
say you have a type. You are a type.
Exactly.
That's why you get those ads.
Yeah, exactly. But it's eerie, right? Because like, I mean, I've heard the stories about people getting ads for like pregnancy tests, you know, not knowing they're pregnant, right?
Sure,
or whatever. Like, there's all these anecdotal stories,
right?
Yeah, and it's like it's fascinating, but the answer is the modeling for it is so good. Mm-hmm. That you would be shocked at the kind of things that they can figure out.
And Apple's argument is all we're doing is we're throwing up a dialogue box and making people opt in. And that is a devious thing that they're doing because it's they know people aren't going to say yes, right?
Like, why would you, right?
They
if
know
you're
it.
Given that option,
exactly.
Like, oh, do I want to be tracked? And like, they're even being super nice about it, right? It's like, it's not like, hell no, I don't want to be tracked. Yeah. It's like, ask politely.
Facebook would like to watch everything you do. So, what I'm saying is that dialogue box is a political act by Apple in a way, because it's Apple basically saying what Facebook wants and has built its business on is people being tracked without their knowledge and consent. And they're so worked up now because we want to ask people if they want to let Facebook do that because Facebook knows they'll say no. And that's why I feel like that dialogue is more about this moment and being able to point to that and say, this is what you're afraid of, is informing people about what Facebook does.
What you're doing, what you're actually doing, telling the truth about what you're actually doing, right? Like that is, they basically, like you said, they put Facebook in a basically untenable position.
It's hard because
they don't have a leg to stand on.
But our whole business model is based on everybody else just not noticing how much surveillance we do.
Right.
Like, okay, well.
And the answer is, well, you should have built a better business model, right? Like, there's no, it doesn't deserve to exist, as you said before. Like, just because you could do this before doesn't mean, I mean, think about, it's like all the stuff where, you know, people were not regulating what goes into certain types of food or something like that, right? And they're like, hey, we decided to change the rules and say you can't use this dye or this much of this ingredient or whatever because it could be potentially harmful. And like, you know, companies being like, but we've always been using that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, we're telling you now, you have to stop.
No more.
And the answer is,
please.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Whatever. There was a thing this morning about some regulation that had gotten overturned about the kinds of like cherries used in frozen cherry pie. And it turned out it was a regulation from like the 70s about not using rotten cherries in these like frozen cherry pies. And like somebody was like super proud that they've overturned this regulation. And we're all like, why though? Anyway, all this stuff where it's like there are reasons for some of these regulations getting put in place. And the answer is, if your business, if you vaunt how much your business is about the capitalism success story, and then you need government regulation to defend your capitalist success story, you've missed the point.
Mm-hmm. I used Apple Fitness Plus.
Ah. Are you fit now?
Well, I run 2 or 3 times a week, and I've run a couple 5Ks this year, which is the first time for that. So by some definition, at least, I'm probably somewhat fit. I would put all the caveats on that, but I do try to get out and exercise, and I live in a place where I can get out and exercise. I ran yesterday. It's fine. It's not like
there is a foot of snow on the ground here. That's
do that. But I did on Tuesday do their bike workout, and it was good. I can't compare it to anything because I've never used anyone. I've never been to a spinning class. I've never been to a fitness class. Frankly, PE is the last time I was in something that you could call a fitness class. So when they had me do a jumping jack on the high intensity interval training demo, I was like, oh yeah, I know that. Are we doing burpees next? I was back in my my gym shorts then. But my experience with stuff like this is limited, but I was impressed by the production values and the way the trainers were themselves sort of trained in terms of presentation. It really does fit with Apple's corporate identity and ethos. It's bright and positive and looks great shot, well, great backgrounds, and the integration with the Apple Watch is really nice. It's really good to see your on the bike. You know, basically the ways that you regulate sort of like the workout as they're telling you to do the workout is to increase or decrease resistance on the bike and to watch your heart rate and the pace that you're going, which goes along with the music and watching the person. And so having my heart rate there was really useful because when she said, you know, this is moderate, you should be at a moderate level, you shouldn't be pushing it now, I was able to look and see that my heart rate, it was at like 125, 130 instead of, you know, my sort of max effort when I've been running for 2 miles, 160. And so I know enough to know that I was in the mid range there so that when later we did the sort of sprint part, the hard part, that was when I had the headroom to get up to 160. And that was all like, it's all there on my iPad screen in that case, sitting on my stationary bike. And yeah, it was good. It was well, it's well built. My daughter was interested in it. She's home, for her school break. And, she was interested in it. And I had to say, well, it doesn't work without the Apple Watch. And it's like one of those things where, I get why it doesn't work without the Apple Watch, but I think that's kind of a mistake. I think that if you're in a, you should let people play the videos and get that experience. If you've got it in your family plan and somebody doesn't have a watch, I would just let them play the videos. I don't feel like the watch is being used in a way that is mandatory. Right. And so I think that's a little bit unfortunate. It might actually sell some watches if you could actually see the videos without and say, oh, that's cool, I should add my Apple Watch. I should get one.
I was wondering about the ability, and I haven't got a chance to try it yet, although I have a free month, I guess, coming because I'm an Apple Watch owner.
Yeah.
My wife and I have done stuff like, you know, workout stuff on the Apple TV and stuff before. But I think you can only have one watch sort of paired
at a time. It lets you, when you enter, it says who's working out, and you
right, because you can
person.
Switch profiles on the Apple TV, but it would be nice.
No, this is
you
not
have...
this is not even that. When you open the fitness app, it gives you a menu of paired watches on a set of family Apple IDs.
Interesting.
And you just
it would
pick
be
who's working out
cool
there, but
you if you could
one.
Do it would be cool if you could do both,
right?
Seems like it's something I would not be surprised to see that come down the road. Maybe just something they didn't think was necessary for launch, but definitely something that would be nice from that.
And if there are features that are Apple Watch specific, but they don't feel mandatory to me. So
right,
I think
it's
you could
showing
do it.
Stuff on screen, but it's not like it doesn't mean they're not like dynamically responding
that's the thing.
To like.
I could see a future version where they built some level of branching or audio feedback or something mm-hmm. that was telling you.
get your heart rate up or
yeah,
slow
different
down
things
or,
based on your stats. And maybe that's why they're including this and saying it has to be with an Apple Watch. But as of right now, the videos just play. Like the videos play. And there's an overlay of watch data. That's it. So they don't need that data at this point. And I think that this is introducing the service, they'd be better off to just have an option in there that was like a person who does not have a watch wants to take this.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Because like I said, if it's not mandatory and not really doing anything with it, then it seems like it's just providing a barrier to entry, and it's a service. Yeah. They want people to pay for it. So, you know, why not make that? I'm looking forward to giving it a try. I think the biggest challenge I have right now is just like we don't have a great place. Like the TV in our living room, the only place to like work out there is in front, like directly in front of the TV, like a foot away.
Oh, yeah,
and
right.
It's just not ideal for that kind of setup. We do have my wife has a thing that turns a normal bike into a stationary bike.
Oh, yeah, trainer.
It's in our office. So you could kind of angle that to be able to see into the living room, which would be okay.
And you could do it on an iPad or an iPhone.
Right, yes.
So there's that.
Like, that would be an option
for my stationary bike. I put my iPad in they're like little clips on the control display of the bike, and I can just slide the iPad in there, and it works great. And in the past, when I've used the stationary bike, it's been kind of a watch TV and use the bike thing.
Sure. Yep.
And that's a bit of a grind. And I see why these classes have appeal, because it focused me and I didn't feel bored. I felt focused, and there's music playing and the trainer is talking. And in the end, I kind of felt more like I had accomplished something more than just running through a basic program on the bike while watching a TV show. So I can see the appeal. It's probably, you know, everybody's going to be different. And I was talking to our friend Lex Friedman, who's a Pelotoner now. And I know some other people who like are super into Peloton with the live classes and all of that, which I'm not sure how I feel about live classes, although it's an interesting idea. And gamification in general is kind of an interesting idea for all this stuff. But, you know, there's different levels and different stuff works for different people. So that's I think Apple having a product here is good. And I think it feels almost incremental to, like, I don't know how many people are going to buy this on its own, but bundle people are going to get it. The premium bundle people are going to get it. And Apple Watch people, if you buy a new Apple Watch, you get what, 3 months of it?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's almost an Apple Watch accessory.
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
at this point,
I'm intrigued. I think it's an interesting move for them. And it also is, you know, points to their larger ambitions in the health and fitness and wellness spaces, right? Like that's clearly something that they are pushing harder into. The Apple Watch was only the beginning. So it will be interesting to see how it evolves from there. And I think that's one place which I've always argued, I think, is sort of Tim Cook's baby. In the same way that music was Steve Jobs's like focus in a lot of the digital media, you could always get the impression that he didn't care as much about things like TV or movies being on the iTunes store.
Steve Jobs loved album art.
He did. The man loved album art. Knew what he liked.
Man. No, he didn't like buttons.
Nope.
Man.
Didn't like buttons.
Can we replace all the buttons with album art? Let's do that.
But yeah, I mean,
Tim Cook is all about
health and fitness.
Yeah.
I think that's his thing, and that's been a great success. And I think it goes to show you that when you are personally, and you have somebody at the top who is passionate about something, that trickles down and finds its way into becoming a more compelling product than a lot of the stuff that you develop when it's like the people at the top are only meh about it, right?
Yeah.
Like,
no, and you... You give more weight to it and you soldier on through difficulties a little bit more because somebody is a believer in it. And if the CEO is a believer in it, then I think it's good. I think it also goes to something that actually talking about Steve Jobs tried to impart in Apple, in its culture, this idea of improving the world, of changing the world, which people can roll their eyes. They're a giant company. They make a lot of money. That's what they're there for. They're a profit-driven corporation. But what I would say is Apple is different than other companies in this way, that some companies' profit is all the motive. Apple, I think philosophically, has always been, or at least in the Steve Jobs era, has been the goal is to make great products that change people's lives, to make the world a better place. And when we do that, we make money. The money is still there. They are still not a charity, but that is sort of like this idea of product focused, customer focused, and doing things that they can feel proud about for the world. And I think that the fitness stuff and the health stuff, as little as Jobs cared about that category, it fits the ethos, right? It's just Tim Cook's take on it.
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah. I don't know. What else is happening? I wrote a little link post about how everybody got excited that the new macOS update enables full screen mode on iOS apps running on Apple Silicon Macs, which is better than not, like more capabilities to make those apps work better in better shapes and sizes is great. But
yeah, it's funny. I got a link in the mail, in the email yesterday about, take a survey about your new MacBook from Apple. And I often just, you know, if it's, I will definitely take one of those surveys if it's something that I care about. And I was sure. Like, oh, my M1 MacBook Air. Sure, I'll take a survey about that. And one of the things they asked about it, like, was like, you know, level of satisfaction with various things. And one of those was running iPhone and iPad apps. And I was like, very dissatisfied. And they're like, oh, why are you very dissatisfied? And I used the full screen as an example of like, these apps don't feel like they're Mac apps. They could use a lot of improvement. And I know that's not all on Apple, but it does feel like, you know, one of the few ways to provide feedback directly, especially when they're looking for it about these things, was like, yeah, I see what you're doing here. Mm-hmm. And there's some good parts of it, but it falls short right now, as I think you probably noticed from all the reviews that the people are reading. And full screen apps is definitely a big part of that. But yeah, I've ended up with very few iOS apps that I'm running on my M1 Air.
Oh, yeah.
There's really not much of a point to it. No. I think, as I mentioned before, the only one I'm using regularly is the Authy iOS version because it's better than the Mac version. And it's even that is not perfect, but it definitely has improvements.
It's just disappointing that there's not a lot there that's any good. And I look at it and I actually kind of wonder why it even exists. It's such a strange thing for them to do, and it's not very good. And, you know, maybe it will get better, or maybe it will be an encouragement to get things on the platform over time. But like the full screen HBO Max that everybody was talking about isn't full screen. It's 4:3. It's locked into the 4:3 aspect ratio of the iPad.
It's full screen, just not your screen.
It's not your screen. It's an iPad screen. And so you end up with a video app that can't play video full screen, which is the problem. The problem is not that the app goes into Mac OS's full screen mode. The problem is the app won't play video on a full sized Mac screen, and that hasn't changed. So I don't know, it's really disappointing. And plus there are so many apps that aren't there. Like it will do picture in picture. MLB's app is like that too, and that's great. I was hoping that the video apps would show up on the Mac, because that's a place where there are so many lousy web pages.
Yep.
Now, they don't have Flash anymore, right? This has gone on so long that Flash is dead now, and the replacements for Flash all are much more conducive to working in Safari in a way that lets you do things like... The example is like you get a video player in Flash. It doesn't do picture in picture. It doesn't do like it's got its own weird interface. And those have all been replaced with HTML players that will do picture in picture and are a lot better. But like MLB's player is wired in with like their ad roll system in between innings. Mm-hmm. And it's wired in with their like their web page that embeds all this data, which is cool and all. But sometimes I just want to have a game on and I want it on in picture in picture.
Yep.
And the MLB app will do that. But the MLB web page won't. And so I want the MLB app, which is available on the Mac and does do this. So that's a win. But I want that for other video services too. And it's just, other than HBO Max, which is not that great, they don't do it.
That seems to be one of those cases where there is that weird bugaboo about like, well, people are going to use their computers to like
piracy
the
right?
And I'm because, like, by the way, first of all, guys, they're doing it already.
It's all pirated already.
Yeah. you're losing that battle.
Nothing has changed. Yeah, because I think it's like Netflix is like, well, no, because they can download things onto their Mac and then they could get the file and then they could. It's like, yeah, they could, but they're already pirating it.
I guarantee you I can go online and find a pristine copy of any show on Netflix.
TV show ever made. Yes.
Yeah. Maybe stop worrying about that because it doesn't make it that much easier. And instead, you're just punishing all the people who are legitimate subscribers of your service and just want to use it the way they want to use it.
If there's a world where you're taking an airplane flight at some point, and you want to watch a movie, and you don't have a tablet, but you do have a laptop, wouldn't it be nice to preload a movie onto the laptop from Netflix? And you can't.
Yep.
Wouldn't that be nice? Good for customers.
Nice? Well, I mean, the good news is no one's taking airplanes anyway.
That's great. That's the best.
You're dodging that bullet right now. You've got like 6 months is what I'm saying. Like 6 months to get this situation under control. But it is... I'm with you. I understand the question about why did Apple do this, and I think the answer was it seemed like a win, like an easy win, even with the lack of polish or availability on a lot of these apps. And I think there is an argument to be made for maybe some light shaming of app developers who haven't, say, implemented Mac Catalyst versions of their iOS apps and stuff like that. I think there is an attempt to encourage people to adapt their apps for the Mac, and certainly as the future of things like Swift UI keep getting closer to things that people are using for everything, the idea of write once, deploy everywhere.
That is the future. I mean, there's no doubt that if you're planning your Apple platform software strategy, the way forward is to plan and deploy across all Apple devices, including the Mac.
I mean, why not? I mean, you're just opening up more avenues for people who want to use your app, right? Like, and I know there are the cases where people still sell different apps for, say, the iPhone and the iPad or the iPhone and the Mac. And, I understand that there are potentially revenue challenges there if you are selling separate, SKUs essentially right now for the Mac and the iPad. But that said, at the same time, that's not everybody. I think there are some people who put in very different products, but, there are a lot of people who's like, their product doesn't even exist on the Mac, and it's like, well, open up the door to some new customers there.
Yeah, and nobody's stopping them. Like, you could design once and deploy a Mac version that is separate from the iOS version and charge separately for it if you want to do that. Probably for a new project, you wouldn't do that, but if you've got an existing project, like, nothing is stopping our friend James Thompson from turning the Mac version of pCalc into something that's entirely based on his iOS code base, but continuing to sell it separately. If he wanted to, he could do that. I think what's preventing him from doing that is mostly that he can't build an app that's as good as the Mac app using the iOS stuff right now, but that time will come. But for new projects, it makes a lot more sense to just... Apple's trying to produce all these different pathways so that, why would you just be on the phone? Be on the phone and the iPad and the Mac. Just write it once. It deploys everywhere. Everything's on Apple's platforms. Great.
Yep. Yeah, that's where we're headed.
Okay, well, it's the moment of truth, Dan. We have to decide what we're doing for this podcast next week.
Oh, because it's Christmas.
Uh-huh.
Well, we could do it on another day. We could take the week off.
What?
I know, calendar, in a moment of a lapse of mercy may allow us to take the next week off if we really wanted to. Let me tell you this. I'm probably not going anywhere.
Uh-huh.
That's not true. I'll probably drive to my parents' house and hand over some presents and get some presents in return and then come back. But it's not going to be a whole thing. But other than that, I'm not sure. We can find some time next week to do a short episode.
I think that's going to be our target. Is we'll find time sometime next week to do a short episode. Maybe skip the week between Christmas and New Year's and then come back strong on the calendar endorsed time of January 8th, 2021. But we'll try to do something in the meantime. So until then. Thanks to everybody out there, and Merry Christmas if you celebrate Christmas. I'd say Happy Hanukkah, but it's over.
It's done.
We did it.
It's done.
It's done.
Yep.
Burn a lot of candles up. And thank you for being with us this year. We'll be back at least one more time sometime. Mysterious. Ooh. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.